views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station, its management, or other advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most inspired visionaries on the planet in lighthearted, lively dialogue. Join us as we explore the expansive nature of reality in a down-to-earth way, offering you insights and tools empowering you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Now, here's your host, Christine Upchurch.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Christine Upchurch Show, where we have stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. I'm speaking to you today from cloudy Seattle here on KKNW AM 1150 at Hubbard Radio. You might be listening on the East Coast in Connecticut, Rhode Island, or New York on WBLQ AM 1230 radio. You might be listening on one of the 35 stations in Australia or anywhere around the world on Transformation Talk Radio, or of course, through the archives. Wherever you're listening from today, whenever you're listening, you're going to be glad you joined us, because we're going to be talking about something that is, we've talked about in various ways before, but we've never discussed it in sort of this structured way. But I'm not going to tell you what that's about until I say hello to my better half here in the studio, Mr. Benny Mathers. You do all the magic, Benny. Thank you.
Stop. Thank you. I appreciate it. And happy, actually, National DJ Day to you as well. You run as much magic out of your mouth as I do on my fingertips.
Well, I'm not so sure about that. I'm not sure what's running out of my mouth sometimes.
That's why you're here, though. That's why you're in the seat.
You do your magic, and we're all very appreciative, with all those computers and boards and gadgets over there.
Yeah, I still am amazed on how much I have to really do every day. That's why I stand a lot and I run around. I hope I'm not stinky and sweaty on you.
We have plenty of distance between us here, don't we, honey?
Thank God for that.
Today we are going to be talking about mindfulness. And I really like what our guest today has to say about it. He's sort of broken it down into little tiny pieces so that our mind can kind of focus on it and we can sort of find some ease into each step of the way of becoming more mindful. His book is called Make Peace with Your Mind, How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Free You from Your Inner Critic. And we're going to be talking a lot about that inner critic. And the person I'm talking about today is Mark Coleman. He is an author of a couple of different books, including the one I just mentioned, as well as Awake in the Wild. He's the founder of the Mindfulness Institute. He has guided students on 5 different continents as a corporate consultant, a counselor, a meditation teacher, and get this, a wilderness guide. He lives in Northern California. And again, he's got a new book out. And it's really interesting because we are going to be talking about this book. And it's about the inner critic, which we all have. Boy, I've become much more aware of my own inner critic since reading this book. I'd like to welcome our guest today, Mark Coleman.
Thank you. Great to be on your show.
Mark, it's kind of like the elephant in the room right now. If you're listening live, this is Inauguration Day here in the United States. And before we get into the details here, I'm just kind of curious. You have done a lot of introspective work. You have guided others both on the personal level and like on the corporate level, on the group level, to become more mindful, more aware. What's your perspective about what has occurred in the United States to sort of create the shift that we are undergoing today, transitioning to Donald Trump as president?
Well, you start with the hard questions.
Why not? Let's just jump right in.
Let me give you my answer in 10 seconds or less. No, that's it's a big question. It's an important question. And I think there's a lot of deep soul searching going on. Particularly anybody who are leaning towards the progressive spectrum of things. And, I have to say, I think Bernie Sanders, of all the commentators out there and politicians, I think he really nailed it, which is, you know, the working class in this country has been left behind mm-hmm. for many decades. And, you know, we are two countries. We're the coastal country and the centrist country. And you know, a lot of the working class and poor folks in America, I think, have been left behind by both parties.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of disenchantment and poverty and struggle and all of that. And I think, unfortunately, what happened is that Donald Trump, in a bizarre way, given he's a billionaire who doesn't actually care for the working person at all,
uh-huh.
but he stole that. He saw, or his advisors saw, that disenchantment with the working class, in particular the white working class, and stole that message that he was going to help working people, which of course we know is not actually going to happen.
Mm.
But and the Democrats were sadly left behind because they actually haven't been fighting for the working man and woman. And so I think that's what tilted the balance. That on top of a growing sense of what Van Jones called white lash, which is the sense of a large part of the white population fearing the, you know, the diminishment of the hegemony of white power, and uh-huh. you know, we're going to be you know, a more diverse country than ever, and I think there are many people who feel unhappy about that. And so I think that combination of disenfranchised working class people and then using the race card, which is happening in Europe and elsewhere, I think that's what tilted the balance, sadly. Mm-hmm.
yeah And you know, I was actually a Bernie supporter. I was a delegate at the local level. I sort of saw the push for Hillary in my state, even though it was very, very obvious there were more supporters of Bernie. It was kind of like this machine that was underway, and it was kind of like Bernie didn't really fit in. But I sometimes wonder if we had Bernie versus Trump, what the outcome might have been.
Yes, I think that question is on a lot of people's minds. And, you know, of course, who knows? We can never know what the media would have done with Bernie and uh-huh. what the Republican would have, right wing would have done with Bernie. But he was standing up for the working class and the poor. And that's a lot of people who voted. And he's not seen as part of the establishment as
yes.
Hillary was. I think he would have had a better chance. And certainly he would have, you know, brought a very different agenda and political vision to what we're seeing now, which is you know, scarcity, racism, hatred,
yes.
bigotry, and isolationism, which mm-hmm. is unhealthy for everybody.
Right, right. And, you know, I think that people were ready for change of one sort or another. It would have been nice to see change versus change as opposed to the status quo versus change, which is what we had.
Right.
Yeah. And it is interesting, though, because Donald Trump has taken some alternative stands on some things, including the connection between vaccines and autism, and wanting to have a commission looking into what the data that was hidden from that study. They actually removed data. There's a whistleblower who was the statistician in that study who's come out with 10,000 pages of documentation about what was done within the CDC. And he, you know, he's got a few, like, sort of radical, what I view as being really left wing perspectives. So he's kind of a real mix.
Yeah, I would say, I mean, he's a mix. I'd say he's more mixed up.
I agree.
I think it's clear that the Republican establishment are not happy with certain things, like the fact that he was against getting rid of the ethics committee. And I think they're going to continue to have problems with him because he's not going to follow the party line as much as some would like. And I think, you know, probably he's going to be 90% seemingly extreme right wing, pro-business, anti-climate. And then 10%, I think, you know, he does want to keep jobs here, and he does want to do some things that I think the liberal left would be, you know, agree with. But I think it's going to be very, very tilted towards extremism.
Yeah, I agree. And our question becomes, How do we affect that sort of, you know, I don't know if pushing against it's the right word. How do we create what it is we want to create within the context of this situation, this political situation? And how do we find balance within our own lives when we've got this external, what we consider to be external turmoil and discordance with our soul, and yet find peace within our lives?
Right. Yeah. And certainly this is a conversation I'm having. You know, my primary work is a meditation teacher and uh-huh. mindfulness consultant, and also train a lot of teachers. And so, and I'm speaking to this, the need for balance. I think one of the ways we need to find balance is to be extremely mindful about what we listen to, what we read, what we watch, because there's so much fear-mongering, scaremongering going on, I'd say particularly on the left. And mm-hmm. We need to be discerning. Some commentators I particularly appreciate have been saying, don't burn yourself out before the guys got into power. Like,
right.
use this time to gather, to find connection, community, or, nourish yourselves after a long burnout of an election. And being mindful that this is a marathon, not a sprint. And so I'm a big nature advocate. And so what I'm telling people is, find what nourishes you, because we're going to be plugged into what's happening, because we're not going to be able to ignore some of the probably outrageous things like, removing 30 people with healthcare coverage, for example.
Right.
And so, but we don't want to have our nose to the grindstone 24/7, because we'll burn out in 6 months. So mm-hmm. we need to also nourish ourselves, we need to go into nature, we need to find friends and community, and see also the joy and the beauty that's still happening, and not always lost. Like it's a bleak possibility, but actually the reality is, it's winter and it's snowing and it's raining and there's spring right. coming. And yeah. so it's really important to remember how to take care of ourselves and find allies and community and support and nourishment, because that's, we need to have a balanced perspective. Otherwise, that pure negative, reactive, fearful mind doesn't actually do much good for anybody.
Yeah. And on some level, it seems to me that Donald Trump exemplifies some of the shadow side of our country. And I think it's probably also the perfect opportunity for us to deal with our own inner shadows.
Right. Yeah, I was just giving a lecture today, and I've been, since the winter solstice, which is the time of going into the dark and honoring the dark uh-huh. and our own shadow, because we all have inner shadow as well as the outer shadow that you could say he's manifesting for some of us.
Right.
And we also need to be, welcoming the inner shadow and the dark places within us and yes. the difficult places with awareness, with kindness, with compassion, with curiosity. So often the outer reflects the inner.
Yes. Fascinating conversation. And when we come back, Mark, I'm going to want you to share with our listeners about your own journey of how you became aware of your inner critic and what you can offer us in terms of dealing with our own. More with Mark Coleman here in just a few moments.
Prejudice. Want a song about it? Like to hear it? Here it go.
Free your mind.
Are you sick of feeling overworked with no motivation? Take a break from the daily grind. Life coach Nicole Eisler is here to provide a healing journey of optimism. Passionate and caring, Nicole is no ordinary soul. Her dedication to helping everyone has no limit. Witness the power of positivity. Tune in every first and third Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific for Positivity Party Radio with Nicole Eisler on Transformation Talk Radio. For more information, visit BigDreamAwakening.com.
What is a brilliant culture? And how do we create them? Why are they important?
Claudette Rowley has created a breakthrough five-step process to help you design a culture that is authentic, innovative, and successful. Learn how to create change with Cultural Brilliance Radio, the DNA of organizational excellence, and Claudette Rowley. To learn more or work with Claudette, visit ClaudetteRowley.com.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
How would you like increased health and vitality? How would you like to avoid the onset of disease as well as slow the aging process? This is all possible through a simple, safe, and natural process. Every day we are either moving toward wellness or away from wellness.
Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. I'd like to be your partner in achieving optimal health. Contact me now at MaryJaneMack.com or call 425-392-0659. Visit MaryJaneMack.com.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. For centuries, spiritual traditions have talked about how humans have an energy field, or aura, surrounding them. Although skeptical scientists refuted this for decades, science is now beginning to catch up with spirituality. Scientists can actually measure light emanating from living beings, so they can measure the human aura, which in scientific terms is known as the biofield. Many medical practitioners around the world use an instrument to evaluate a patient's biofield for the purpose of diagnosing illness. They understand that imbalanced or insufficient light in a person's energy field indicates a physical or emotional problem. The good news? There are ways to balance and increase your light, resulting in greater well-being. For more information, please check out StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, Mark, you in your book, Make Peace with Your Mind, How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Free You from Your Inner Critic. You talk about your journey from someone who had a very strong inner critic to somebody who is teaching mindfulness and meditation all around the world. How did you go from that? How did you make that transition?
Well, it was a long, slow journey, as journeys can be, and certainly inner journeys, inner work can be. I was a young man in England, London, punk rocker, anarchist, confused, angry, raging against the machine,
right.
And I was really. My lens was turned outward. I thought I was unhappy and miserable because of society and injustice and government. Oh. And I stumbled across a meditation center purely by accident. And, of course, in meditation, we turn that lens of attention inwards when we look at our own mind and heart. And I saw that really what was causing so much of my anguish was my own mind, and particularly the critical, judgmental, negative, harsh, cruel voice that I was talking to myself, as do many people, and it was kind of a wake-up call to see that, oh, I could actually transform my sense of well-being by working with my own mind and my own reactivity and ideas and views and distortions and whatnot. So that began basically a lifetime of exploration of meditation through mindfulness, through Buddhist studies. I went to Asia, eventually moved to the States, and at some point, maybe, I don't know, 15 years into that, began teaching and sharing what I'd known and been teaching, you know, for the last 15, 20 years, mostly through, you know, teaching meditation practice and retreats and courses, and then more recently, last 10, 12 years in corporations and companies and organizations. And I also teach a lot on the inner critic, because I see that one of the main ways that we are unhappy is the ways that we are so hard and critical and cruel to ourselves.
Mm-hmm. And Do you think most people are aware of their inner critic?
I think they are, but I think people are aware of it as part of the living room furniture. It's just, oh, yeah, that's the way I talk to myself. Yeah, that's my negative voice. Yeah, that's, you know, I mean, doesn't everyone have one of those kind of voices that tell you you're stupid every day? It's just, especially like growing up in England, where I think the critic is even more louder than here.
Really?
It's just part of how people, the humor is based on self-deprecation.
Okay.
And putting oneself down. Uh-huh. And so I think it becomes just the norm. It becomes part of the living room furniture. We don't even notice.
Uh-huh. So if it's the norm, if it's like it is for everybody else, you know, at least our perception of everybody else, then what becomes the impetus for change?
Suffering. Suffering is the greatest motivation for change. And I think when one wakes up to how intense that voice is, and also that one has some agency or some control or some ability to work with it, then I think that's the motivation. I mean, the critic is fundamentally a source of great pain, because if, you know, the voice is telling us you're stupid, you're worthless, mm-hmm. you're no good, you should be more, you're not enough, right? When we listen to that long enough, that's just a recipe for feeling miserable. And mm-hmm. so when people realize that and realize they can do something about it, then that's what starts people to actually, you know, pay attention and do something.
Mm-hmm. So if we all, to a certain degree, one degree or another, have this inner critic, where does it originate?
Well, it's a good question. I think primarily it comes, you know, I mean, way back to, you know, the end of the 18th century, you know, Freud was talking about the superego, the structure in the ego that basically controls and manages an infant's wilder impulses, strong emotions, hatred, anger. So it's basically, you know, we're born into a system, a family, culture, religion. And, you know, as children, we're very, you know, there's a lot of energy and passion and strong emotion. And we have to learn very quickly how to fit in with our family of origin. And so a lot of things aren't welcome. And our psyche has to find ways to shut some of those impulses down. And the strongest thing to shut something down in ourselves is shame. And so the critic or the superego uses this function of shame to thwart all those feelings and actions and impulses before the outer critics, the parents, the family, whatever, shuts them down. So that's how it gets instilled. And then, unfortunately, as we grow older and leave home and we no longer need to fit in that same way, the critic still maintains itself and often gets stronger. And so we find ourselves being harsh and judgmental and critical and shaming, even though we no longer need to have that kind of very simplistic and harsh force in us.
Mm-hmm. So how do we become more aware of our inner critic?
Well, so the subtitle of the book, How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Help Free from the Critic. So mindfulness, from my perspective, is really fundamental in that mindfulness is simply the capacity to be aware, to know our experience. And so we have to start bringing attention to our thoughts, bring attention to the kinds of thoughts we have, right? We have a whole range of thoughts, from creative to imaginary to imaginative to, you know, planning, judging, ruminating. And so we need to begin to isolate when our thinking is judgmental in this, what I call this negative, self-critical way.
Uh-huh.
So we're clear when it's happening. And then we start to bring a little more clarity or investigation to the thoughts, because often, mostly the critical thoughts are not very accurate, not very useful.
It's not the way they feel sometimes, though.
Well, they often
feel like they're the truth, you know?
Right. And that's another thing we want to pay attention to is how do we relate to those thoughts? Do we believe them? Do we give them authority? Do we give them the objective truth? Because if we really analyze them in the cold light of day, and if we ask the 10 people who know us best, you really, you know, think fact that I'm worthless or stupid or a failure or no good or unlovable or whatever.
Right.
Most people we know and love will say, no, I don't think that's true. You may have a flavor of something around maybe, you know, organization or around thoughtfulness or around. But, you know, the critic is generally these very global statements that always never should and are not so accurate. And so if we listen to them, we will start to feel bad, worthy, stupid, hopeless, et cetera.
Right. So I guess there's a difference. Like, let's say that I've decided, like, my inner critic says, you know, you're getting fat. And if it's like, oh, you know, kind of like, oh, gaining a little weight, you know, it's time to deal with it. But usually what it'd be like is somehow I'm not beautiful, I'm not lovable, whatever. There's like this attachment to, you know, what the inner critic is saying.
Right.
And it's that that causes the pain.
Right. And here's the crucial thing that you're pointing out is that there's a difference between, this is why I say pay attention to the judgments, because, and there's a chapter in the book called Making a Difference Between Discernment and Judgment. So we need discernment, we need assessment, we need evaluation, we need to discriminate, we need to analyze, right, all very healthy cognitive functions. The judging mind comes in, and rather than saying, you know, so say you're reviewing your radio show, and you may assess, you know, it was a little rambly at times, or it was a good interview, but maybe we could have stayed more on point or whatever. But that's a healthy assessment. The judgment comes in and says, well, that was terrible. I mean, that was stupid. You know, you were hopeless. You know, you really, I don't know why you bothered doing this. I mean, someone else that would have done that much better. And so the judge attacks our personhood and our value and our worth rather than the action itself. So it's the difference between person-centered praise or critique versus process. The process is, yeah, you know, there's things I could adapt and adjust to make the show better. But the person-centered critique is, you're a bad person, you're a stupid person, you shouldn't bother. Right. Why, you know? And that's what we want to look at, because we want to unhook from that, because it's so debilitating when we actually buy into that attack on our being and on our value and our worth.
That makes sense. We have to go to another quick break, but more here in just a few moments.
I'm going to do a terrific show today because I'm good enough, I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me.
Be unstoppable. Who do executive women count on for up-to-date information on everything from stilettos to being heard in the boardroom? To achieve excellence, you must first take control of your life and develop a successful strategy with the Unstoppable Diva. Tune in to Up or Out with Connie Fife, Mondays 5 p.m. Eastern, as she cuts through the BS to guide you to become bold, connected, and unstoppable. For more information, visit uporout.com.
Are you ready to stop stress, anxiety, and low self-esteem from running your life? Join award-winning author Dr. Friedemann Schaub for Empowerment Radio and learn breakthrough solutions to switch out of survival mode and approach every day with great ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in the first and third Wednesday at 11 a.m. Pacific to Empowerment Radio with host Dr. Friedemann Schaub on Transformation Talk Radio. Visit the fearandanxietysolution.com to learn more.
Registration is now open for the 25th Annual Woman of Wisdom Conference. Join the fabulous presenters from around the country on February 16th through the 20th. If you believe in raising the feminine spirit and transforming our world, then this conference is for you. Get your tickets now. One day and full weekend passes are available. For more information about presenters and tickets, visit womanofwisdom.org. That's womanofwisdom.org.
On the cutting edge of the new mainstream, Christine Upchurch is passionate about bringing together science, psychology, and spirituality in a way that can be applied to our everyday lives for true transformation. The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey, engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and Transformation Talk Radio.
Chris Stainis is a spiritual leader and healer and teaches a course on how you can transform your life through a meditation and healing system that will manifest your spirit's dreams. She manifested the Women of Wisdom Conference, the Women of Wisdom book, and this radio show. And she can show you how to change your life too. Are you ready? Visit the website and contact her at voicesofwomentoday.com. That's voicesofwomentoday.com.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. What does the word healing mean? Many think that healing merely means eliminating symptoms. However, based on my many years as a healer, I have a much broader perspective on the word. Healing can manifest in a variety of ways, including having physical problems resolve, becoming more emotionally centered, experiencing better relationships, gaining greater clarity, and feeling more spiritually connected. True healing always includes some level of transformation. Whatever form healing takes, there is one commonality, an improvement in quality of life. To me, the highest form of healing goes beyond aligning with wellness. It comes from recognizing our soul's voice and allowing it to speak through us. And in that sense, don't we all yearn to heal into our wholeness? Please visit StellarReflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
Welcome back to the Christine Upchurch Show here on KKNW, WBLQ, and Transformation Talk Radio. I'm talking today to Mark Coleman. He's the author of a couple of books, including his latest, which is Make Peace with Your Mind, How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Free You from Your Inner Critic. Now, Mark, you know, we all have this inner critic. I've gotten to know mine better and better over the years. And you're talking about the importance of awareness. Once we are aware of the judgment that can be going on there, how do we shift it?
So, as I said, the primary thing is the awareness, because if we're not aware of it, of course, it's just going to keep going on and on and on. Once we're aware of it, then there's a few steps. There's beginning to feel the impact of it. So normally we listen to the critic, and sometimes the critic is so close we think it's our own, you know, it's just our own voice. Uh-huh. But it's useful to create some kind of separation or some space between ourselves and the voice. We want to feel how it lands. So a big shift for me in my journey with the critic was I would just listen to my critic and believe it and agree with it. Uh-huh. And at some point in meditation, I was sitting and I began to feel how it was to be talked to so harshly and judgmentally, in the same way that, you know, if a good friend or a colleague at work or something judges us and criticizes us, you know, it's hard to hear and it can be painful. Mm-hmm. And in the same way, if we really listen to our body and our heart, it's actually painful to be so cruel to ourselves. So the more that we can actually get how painful it is, it's one more step to not being so identified and allied with it.
Mm-hmm. Although, don't you think some people feel like they deserve the pain?
Yes, definitely. And of course, that's just another faulty belief that needs to be examined. Uh-huh. And even if they feel like they do deserve the pain, the berating ourselves and judging ourselves, say we messed up on something or we forgot something important, uh-huh, and our critic reminds us, as it will, 50 times a day, right? We think, oh, if I keep judging myself and berating myself, I'll be better next time. But actually, all the judgment does, it makes us feel bad. We collapse a little. We feel more unworthy. we feel less clear and less likely to actually bring effective change. That's the irony of all that judgment. We think, oh, if I just, I'm just hard on myself enough, I'll, you know, be better next time. But it just makes us feel bad. It's not really the good basis for constructive action.
Mm-hmm.
So then we bring a lens of inquiry, and we start examining, okay, so what's my critic saying? And is it really true? Is it objective?
Mm-hmm.
Is it really true that I messed up? Is it really true I'm a failure? Is it really true that, you know, whatever the judgment is saying? You know, sometimes it may be true. Like, yeah, maybe we missed an important occasion. Maybe we missed our, mother's birthday or something, uh-huh. or whatever, you know,
right.
things we do. So that data, the data of what the critic's saying, yeah, you missed your mother's birthday is true, but what comes with that, as in, oh, you're stupid, or you don't uh-huh. care, or you're a terrible son or daughter, or
right.
all the later interpretations, that's what needs to be examined and scrutinized, and again, to have some distance with. So we notice it, we notice the impact, we start investigating it. I have my students on courses that I teach write down the judgment. Because when we read our judgments, that we usually bring a little more discernment to the written word than to the thoughts rambling round in the tumble dryer of our head. So,
right, right.
If I read, I'm a stupid person, it's like, well, is that really true? I'm stupid. I can be stupid on occasion,
uh-huh.
but am I a stupid person? No, I don't think that's actually true.
Uh-huh.
Otherwise, how could I do the work that I do? Or am I unlovable? Well, you know, I may not love myself that much, but clearly there's certain people around me who find mm-hmm. think that I'm lovable. And so to bring some discernment to that, I have people share those judgments with people close to them and ask, is this true? And again, to get some objective perspective, which is a little scary to share some of those very secret, hidden, shameful judgments. But actually,
right.
it can be helpful because we all basically have the same judgment that we're not enough, we should uh-huh. be doing more, we should be messed up, and blah, blah, blah. And to also see that this is not just me that has this issue, that it's really a kind of a universal feature of being human. Mm-hmm. And so that can also take the sting of it, because sometimes we judge ourselves extra for having a judging mind, when of course
right.
we all have judging minds. So we're judging ourselves for being judgmental that we're judging.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
It's a never-ending cycle. So that's, I mean, there's a chapter in the book called The Inner Critic Toolkit, and there's a whole bunch of strategies, but I'll stop there for now because that's just the first round of things we need to do. Bring awareness, bring discernment, feel it, scrutinize it, inquire into it, challenge whether it's true, write it down.
And you mentioned shame at one point. How does shame fit into this whole picture?
Well, shame is really important piece with the critic because the you could summarize the net effect of the judging mind is we feel shame. We feel bad. We feel unworthy. We feel that sense of collapse. So, as I said, in our early childhood, that shaming mechanism was used to control ourselves and that's the wayward impulses, you could say. And as an adult, and the net effect is we feel basically bad. And of mm-hmm. course, feeling shame is kind of a hopeless basis for any constructive action. When we feel shame, we feel mildly depressed, we feel hopeless, we feel helpless,
mm-hmm.
and there's a sense of feeling stuck. And so
it's not a good motivator, is it?
Not a good motivator, not a happy or healthy state to be in. And that's why it's so important to challenge and work with the critic. Otherwise, we do end up living with this low-level sense of shame.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Okay. So I know that you teach ways in which we can sort of reprogram. How do we go about doing that? And is there science that backs up that your approach, this approach, actually can affect change?
Yeah, well, I mean, the basis of neuroplasticity, which is, you know, the understanding that's come out of neuroscience of the last 20 years, particularly with the advent of fMRI machines that can track the brain and changes in the brain structure with our thoughts and emotions and behavior. The basis of neuroplasticity is that our brain can change depending on what we do, what we think, how we decide, what behaviors we enact, what we give attention to, how we pay attention. And so, and this is really the fundamental basis of both mindfulness and Buddhist practice, which is we can change who we are and how we are, you know, in any moment by what we focus on, what we give attention to. And so in any moment, we can pay attention to our habit of mind, our judging, or our, you know, our orientation. So, for example, we can look at someone and we can carry on our sort of nitpicking, critical, judgmental habit, or we can choose to not do that and say, look at the person's good qualities or their strengths or their gifts or their, you know, positive characteristics, right?
Right.
And the same with ourselves. Or we can do that with the world. And so the more that we orient towards what's okay, what's positive, what's constructive, what's helpful, what's good, rather than what's negative, critical, problematic, then we're shifting that negative orientation of the inner and the outer critic. It's not to be Pollyannish, and it's not to get rid of our healthy critique, like we need a healthy critique of this administration that's going to be doing all kinds of funky things.
Right.
But it's more this negative nitpicking that's always fault-finding, it's always problem-seeking, particularly with ourselves and others, which lends to a very negative critical mind state, which is, I would say, is very unhealthy.
And science shows that we can actually change it, rewire the brain, essentially.
Yes, and there's been thousands of studies now in the last 10 years on mindfulness, because mindfulness, this capacity to be aware and to know what we're doing, to know what we're thinking, and therefore change the habit of mind, is one of the most powerful tools to change the function and the habit and actually even the neural structure of the brain. So the good news of this work, and the reason I teach this work, is we can change this habit. We can come to know our mind through mindfulness and begin to shift that negative orientation.
Interesting. And we're going to go to another quick break, Mark. But when we return, I'm going to like you to talk about how we can bring compassion to this process and how we can shift this in our lives so that we are healthier, happier. More with Mark Coleman here in just a few moments.
I'm Christine Upchurch, and this is a Stellar Reflections Minute. As a former research statistician, my scientific background is what many would call sensible. For more than a decade now, I have been working in the field of energy medicine, facilitating sessions and teaching around the world. People from the mainstream often ask me, how did a sensible woman like you end up working in such an alternative field? Implicit in their question is the underlying assumption that the field of subtle energy, such as energy healing and intuition, isn't sensible. But I believe it is very sensible. Even scientists are able to measure aspects of this. Approaching life from an energetic perspective brings us new opportunity for healing and transformation. And from a practical standpoint, even if you can't rationally explain how something works, if you experience a shift from it, then doesn't it make it pretty sensible? Please visit stellarreflections.com or call 425-999-9836. That's 425-999-9836.
What if your body and mind were the compasses to the secrets, mysteries, and magic of life? Glenna Rice, co-host of The Questionable Parent, is inviting you to access all that is possible. Glenna is a 10-year certified veteran access consciousness facilitator who offers an amazing variety of life-changing classes and workshops. Work with Glenna from anywhere, with teleclasses and workshops all over the globe. To learn more and see Glenna's current schedule of events, classes, and workshops, visit glennarice.com.
Tune in to Dynamics of Diversity Radio, scripting the new narrative for immigration with leading experts Kripa Upadhya and Steve Tanija on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will remove the noise that often accompanies discussions on this topic and share a new perspective on the dynamics of immigration and diversity, ever reminding us that together we are all at the core of innovation, excellence, and positive change. Visit OrbitLawPLLC.com for upcoming topics.
Have you been seeing numbers like 111 and 222 everywhere you go? Do you feel that the universe may be trying to get your attention, perhaps offering a message of some sort? As it turns out, numerical patterns and certain types of geometry form the very fabric of our reality, from cells under a microscope to the astronomy of our night sky. At Stellar Reflections, we offer special sessions which tap into these patterns, designed specifically to support you on your journey. The 111 and 222 activations are sessions activating new patterns in your energy field, which in turn can help you create new patterns in your life. After just one session with a practitioner, either in person or via distance, clients report gaining greater clarity, becoming more intuitive, and honoring their inner truth as they move forward in their lives. Curious about what these transformational sessions might do for you? Call 425-999-9836 or visit StellarReflections.com. That's StellarReflections.com. Welcome back to the Kristen Epchurch Show here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio. You know, Mark, I'm fascinated by the way you have taken this, you know, mindfulness, the inner critic, and bringing compassion to create change into these bite-sized pieces that are well-written with exercises at the end, you know, little practices, and it feels like you've taken a subject that is huge and made it, you know, basically approachable. And, you know, I find it very helpful the way you have organized this.
Great. Well, that was my intention, was to, you know, it's a difficult subject. It's painful. Nobody really wants to read about the inner critic. And I was determined to make it, and the same with when I teach, I bring a lot of humor to the subject because I think it's really important that we, you know, make this stuff accessible, but we also don't take ourselves so seriously and find a sense of humor, because, you know, we have crazy minds, and the more that we can find that humor and space and awareness, then the less we're going to be painfully impacted.
Right. And I know that you've got a lot of events coming up. How can people connect with you?
Yeah, so the best place is go to markcoleman.org. That's Mark with a K, coleman.org. And that has both my book tour information and my retreats and my nature work and my consulting and collaboration with the New York Times and all kinds of different teaching events. But I will be in D.C. and New York and L.A. and San Diego in the next few weeks. So look for my website, markcoleman.org, and it has all the information on there.
And it sounds like we may get you up here in Seattle as well.
That's true. I'm hoping to come to Seattle and Portland and Vancouver in April. So look
Wonderful.
Out for that.
Wonderful. Okay, so we've talked about that darn inner critic that we all have, and sort of becoming more aware through the mindfulness and trying to reprogram the mind. How important is compassion when dealing with this?
Yeah, that's a really important piece, and hence being in part of the subtitle. And compassion is in there because, one, the whole thing is just so painful. I mean, the critic, being judged, being shamed is really, really painful. And if we've had it for a long time, it probably has led to depression or unworthiness. Mm-hmm. So it's really important, one, that we're not judgmental about ourselves for having a critic, but actually caring and compassionate and kind, because it's so painful to be talked to like that.
Right.
And also, you know, compassion and love, you know, are very powerful qualities. And when we can be with ourselves with love, it also allows us to stand up to the critic and anybody else, for that matter, who's critical of us, and to be fiercely self-protective, not out of anger, but out of love. And so the more that we can find that quality of self-love, which, as I teach about in the book, through the practice of loving kindness, which is replacing the critical thoughts with caring, kind, statements and wishes for ourselves, the more that we can build up that resource of self-love, the less we're going to be impacted by the critic.
Uh-huh. So it's an interesting balance of sort of becoming aware and not taking it too seriously, but also taking it seriously enough to understand that we're doing ourselves damage.
Right. Yeah, exactly. We're paying attention to when it's hurtful and also having a sense of humor about it, so we can hold it lightly and be playful with it. So ultimately, we want to learn to be somewhat disinterested in that voice. I think that
you said disinterested. Did you say disinterested?
Disinterested. Uh-huh. So it's like a yapping dog that we don't give much attention to. Right. And the other piece about compassion that I think is also important is learning to be caring for the fact that the critic usually starts revving because we feel vulnerable. There's a vulnerability that we might be judged, we might be rejected, we might be excluded. And so rather than being compassionate for the judge itself, we want to be compassionate for the feeling of vulnerability from which the judgment arises from.
Okay. So does the inner critic serve any good purpose?
I would say that we have so many different parts of our mind that can do a far better job than the critic, right? Like our analytical side, our healthy critical side, our conscience to make difficult ethical decisions. I would say that there are much more healthy ways to assess and to judge ourselves than attacking our worth and value as a person.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about the inner critic. Can we have more than one in some sense?
Yes. So I have the chapter in the book about the inner boardroom, and it really is like a boardroom. We have the taskmaster, and we have the bully, mm-hmm. and we have the coach, and we have the perfectionist, and we have the never enough voice. And so it really is like living with a boardroom or living in a bad college dorm where everybody's on your case. And so the more we identify the different voices, then the more we're going to be clear when the judge is operating.
Uh-huh. So you said the P word in there. How does perfectionism relate to all of this?
Well, the critic basically wants us to be perfect, wants us not to have foibles, not to have our wacky idiosyncrasies. And often it's basically saying it's not okay to be who you are. It's not okay to be human. You're supposed to be perfect. And of course, there's no such thing as perfection in life. We do the best we can. We all do our try, and then we let go to whatever actually happens. Uh-huh. But the critic is never happy. And sometimes we do our best to appease the critic and please the critic, but the critic is a perfectionist. And so it's a never-ending trudge of trying to be better. And you look at the most successful, brilliant, like, a quote from award-winning Academy actress who just gave a great speech. Meryl Streep, who said, I don't know why people come to my movies. I'm rehearsing for my next film.
Wow.
I can't act. So no matter how good you are in your field, according to the critic, it's never perfect enough. It's never good enough, never enough money, never enough success. And so that's why listening to it is a never-ending source of unhappiness, basically.
And in your book, you also talk about how many of us feel like we're an imposter.
Yes. And again, very ubiquitous. Research says at least 70% of us feel like we're imposters, whether it's your radio show host or a parent or a physician or, that if we listen to that voice that's saying, we're not good enough, you're a fake. If only people really knew what you would like, you'd be fired. Your partner would leave.
Right.
And if we listen to that enough, then we do start feeling like a fraud and a fake. And we feel like we're just kind of, faking it till we make it. And often that's, couldn't be further from the truth. Like Meryl Streep thinks she's an imposter. Einstein at the end of her life said, I think I've been, fooling people, the most brilliant scientists we've had. So it's imperative that we don't listen to and believe the message is telling us.
So do you have any quick tips for us as parents or grandparents about how we can help shift this early on so that when this child grows up, their inner critic isn't so strong?
Yeah, I think the main thing is what I see, from my conditioning in England and and you know, anywhere and ever, it's quite ubiquitous, is the more that we can let go of the language of good boy, good girl, you know, where we're giving person-centered praise or blame or judgment. So instead, we're looking at the person and the child's action. You know, so we can, of course, say, you know, Johnny or Jane, you know, when you do this, when you say that, when you act like that, that's hurtful. It's painful for others. It's not helpful. Right. So so they're oriented towards the action, not the person. So they don't internalize a sense of being bad for doing something. They just learn, oh, these ways of behaving and talking are not so skillful. So we just want to shift away from labeling them as good or bad, because either way we label that, there's always a fear they're going to slip into the bad camp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. And I know that parenting is a hard job. And I know that there are many people listening who are actually fairly mindful as parents go. You know, Mark, this hour has flown by. And again, I want to tell everybody that the website is markcoleman.org. That's markcoleman.org. And his latest book is Make Peace with Your Mind, How Mindfulness and Compassion Can Free You from Your Inner Critic. Mark, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Thank you so much. A pleasure to talk to you.
And I want to thank you for joining us here today. I look forward to talking to you again sometime very soon. Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to The Christine Upchurch Show, stellar conversations to illuminate your journey. Each week, this show engages some of the most outstanding visionaries on the planet in lively dialogue to inspire you to become that bright light you're meant to be. Join Christine every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time on KKNW, AM 1150, and TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about the transformative healing work of Christine, visit www.StellarReflections.com. And for weekly topics, visit www.TransformationTalkRadio.com.